to help me get motivated. Could I use my $150 gift for that?
You bet. And lots of other great services, too. My friend Sue is using hers for swim lessons for her son. And my mom is getting her own locker and towel service. Or use your gift for TRX group training or dual club membership.
But isn't there a big enrollment fee?
No, First & Fitness lowered it to just $20.
I'm glad I ran into you. I'm heading to First & Fitness to join now.
Visit First & Fitness in Montpelier and Berlin and take advantage of this special offer, good for a limited time.
All right, we are back, and let's give a nice Storm Radio Vermont welcome this morning. One of my old friends, Ted Tedford, is joining us here. Ted is the author of a book about the St. Albans raid called Incident at St. Albans, and this is a fictionalized account of what was the northernmost activity in the Civil War. So Ted's joining us here. Ted and I worked together at the Free Press, just a couple of years ago, right? Oh,
yeah,
my
more
goodness.
More than a couple.
Wow,
yeah.
Amazing. So when did you leave the Free Press?
December 31st, 1990, and went to work as a freelance writer for a newspaper in Jericho, Cambridge, Underhill area. I freelanced for that for a couple of years, and then man and wife, physicians from New York State, bought it and asked me to run it. So I ran it for 6 years, and they finally closed it up. So I just started freelance writing here and there. I wrote for the Champlain Business Journal and, stories wherever I could sell them. But in the meantime, I had gotten interested in the St. Albans raid. But the thing that interested me most was not just the raid itself, but the guy who ran the raid, who led it. He was an incredible young man, 18 years old. He left Divinity School in Kentucky, in the Bluegrass area. Joined the famous Confederate raider, John Hunt Morgan, who raided up through Kentucky and in Tennessee and areas like that, fighting against Northern troops. Bennett Young was captured along with most of Morgan's men when Morgan was defeated after disobeying orders from General Bragg, the Southern commander out there. He invaded Indiana, got chased around up north of Cincinnati, crossed the river into Ohio, north of Cincinnati, and then began to be chased all the way across southern Ohio. An incredible, incredible journey of over 1,000 miles. Finally, the Confederates just ran out of steam, and they were chased by over 100,000 troops, Union regular troops.
Jeez.
And militia troops, and they were finally defeated at a little place called Buffington Island. Morgan wanted to cross there to get into what he thought was Virginia, but he didn't realize in the meantime, Virginia, the western part of Virginia, had broken off and become West Virginia, which was a Union state.
Uh-huh.
So that wasn't a good place to go.
Uh-huh.
But they did get a few men across who managed to escape, but most of them were captured. Except Young and Morgan. Morgan's second in command told him to gather up as many as he could and try to escape. So they did for a while. They continued going east toward Pennsylvania, where Morgan hoped to join up with Robert E. Lee. He didn't realize that on the way, Lee had been defeated at Gettysburg and was retreating south, so there was no recourse for him there.
Whoops.
Whoops is right. And so they all got captured. And Young was sent, along with several other Confederates, to a prison camp in Chicago, where he was there for a few months. He managed to escape. I have a section of a little account of that in the book. And he escaped and went across into Ontario, made his way to St. Catharines and then to Montreal, where he ran into a bunch of other Confederate escaped prisoners. And thousands of Southern people who had fled the fighting in the South, their homes were destroyed, and it was just no way that they could live there anymore. There was a commissioner or two commissioners in Canada sent up by the Confederate government to coordinate things up there and to help the people who live there. survive, and also to try to organize the Confederate soldiers into some band that they could maybe do some things.
Mm-hmm.
There was a captain who was had been with Morgan for a while, but he was headed up the Confederate Secret Service. Believe it or not, the Confederates had a Secret Service.
Wow.
These guys didn't protect the president. What they were small bands who were sent out. One of them was then sent out to burn New York City. That was a pretty historical thing. They managed to burn a couple of hotels. That's all he did. Young was assigned to a unit to go into Chicago again and free the camp where there were 13,000 Confederate prisoners where he had escaped from.
Mm-hmm.
But that that got blown because a group of Democrats who called themselves Sons of Liberty sort of let the thing out of the bag, and the Union found out about it, and they beefed up the security at the prison, so that was called off.
Okay.
But in the meantime, Young came up with a plan. He said, I wondered if we could raid some towns along the northern border with the United States and with Canada. And a couple of reasons, three reasons, actually. One was for retribution against what was happening in the South.
Right.
The main reason was to see if they could withdraw Union troops to the north to guard the border so that would ease the Confederacy in the South.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, the war was going very well, badly against the Confederates. And also to see if they could steal some money and ship it south and help the Confederate treasury. The Confederate officials were certainly not averse to a little bank robbery here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Which Young organized the men. He was assigned by one of the commissioners to go to Richmond to get this approved by the Confederate government.
Richmond, Virginia.
In Richmond, Virginia, yeah. And he left there, went to St. John's. He caught a British ship to Bermuda. Then he caught a Confederate blockade runner in Bermuda to take him to Wilmington, North Carolina.
Wow.
And then he made his way to Richmond. It took a long time.
Wow.
It took a long time.
I mean, today we do it in one connection.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
And he got permission from the Secretary of War and from President Jefferson Davis to do this, and he was sent back to...
And he's got to go all the way back.
All the way, the same way, yeah. Same, all the way back
wow.
to Bermuda and back. And he met up with those commissioners, and he was given a sum of money, about $2,000, which was quite a bit of money in those
yeah.
days. And he was told to organize 21 men, or 20 men and himself, to conduct a raid wherever he could determine would be the best town or city to do it.
Let me stop you right there. We're talking with Ted Tedford. He's the author of Incident at St. Albans. We're talking about this St. Albans raid, which was 150 years ago yesterday. If you have any comments or questions, you can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let me take a moment of your time for our friend Mike Rousseau at the Tailor Shop in Stowe's Lower Village. If you want to bring out your Civil War era clothing, Mike can even make that fit for you. He's open on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We always encourage you on Monday to get those items in the car. For some of us, it can be about a 5-stage process to get it up to Mike. So get them in the car right now. Okay, just get them out of the closet first. And then on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 10 a.m., yes, Mike can make it happen for you. Quick turnaround time, too. How about somebody with 50 years of experience in the business? He's one-third of the way to the St. Albans raid. My goodness. And you'll find Mike on Route 100 on the right-hand side of the road. That is the Tailor Shop. All right, we pick up the story here with Ted Tedford. And so he's gotten the money to do these raids. How did they decide to go to St. Albans?
Well, Young decided he would come down into the United States and scout a few places. He thought about Malone, New York, and a couple of towns along there. Went to Malone, decided that wasn't really a good place to go. And he came down to Swanton. He went back to Montreal, came down to Swanton, looked that over. Didn't think that was so well. He was on a train, by the way. And so he continued on to St. Albans and got off the train, and walked from the train station, which is down on Lake Street. It was called Champlain Street then. And there's a big foundry there. And then he walked up to Main Street and saw three banks and saw a bustling little community. And he said, there's money here, and this is going to be a good place to start. So he went back to Canada, recruited all his men, and they slowly infiltrated St. Albans over a period of about 10 days.
Yeah, they're like bringing a few men at a time.
Yeah, yeah. And they stayed at the hotels and the boarding houses and a few places. There's a couple of, one hotel where they stayed is still in existence. It's been completely renovated and shops and apartments.
And nobody sensed all these Confederate people were in town.
Nobody figured anything out. Huh. I mean, they didn't know what was going on. These guys were there, and they, as they went around town and had dinner at places, you know, they had to eat, of course, and had to sleep. They talked to townspeople and said they were there. They're down here to do some fishing and maybe a little hunting. And
yeah, which they were, yeah.
Yeah. And Young asked one person there, said, do you know any gun shops around here where we can buy some rifles? We want to do some hunting.
Great.
Or where we can go fishing. And they said, well, there's one gun shop, but that's about it in town, and not really very much. But you're welcome to try our lakes and our streams. Trout fishing is great, and we'd love to have you here. And they sort of disguised their southern accents. Most of them were from Kentucky, so they didn't have the deep south accent like they do in Tennessee and Alabama and places like that.
So they got a lot of money for that era. They got a lot of money. How much did they get?
Well, they on the day of the raid, the day that they were going to do the raid, Young realized it was market day, what they called in St. Albans. The people were coming in with their the farmers were coming. This is not October, so the harvest is over, and people were selling their goods, you know, and on Main Street. So that was too crowded. He felt people might get in the way. So he put it off a day to Wednesday, October 19th, which the 150th anniversary was yesterday, October 19th, 150 years ago. They next morning, Young assembled them all and said to at breakfast, they had different places, so he went around to different places where they were and told them to be in his room at the St. Albans house the Tremont house, rather, at 3 o'clock, or 2:30. So they all assembled. They tromped up the stairs to his room. They all crowded into this little room, and they went over the plans once more. They had been briefed before. And they went down stairs. They all walked toward the bank. Some of them walked toward the banks. There's three banks on Main Street at that time. And a group went over to guard the two streets leading up from the Lake Street, from the foundry and the railroad station. And they put men on the at Taylor Park across the street to herd anybody who's coming on the street over there to get them out of the way. So at 3 o'clock, they all tromped out, took their positions. Young walked down the stairs and stood in, and he had a full Confederate uniform on at that time that he had made in Montreal for him.
Wow.
They made it for him. And it had a big cape over the top of his uniform. And he opened that and pulled out two six-shooters. And he said, I claim this town in the name of the Confederate States of America. And people walking by looked at him like, this is a kind of crazy man out here. What is he doing? What is this guy in this funny-looking uniform, you know? But a few shots were fired, and then people started to realize what was going on. The man went into the banks. It took about 10, 15 minutes to rob the banks. They gathered up around $208,000, which today would probably be like, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 million?
At least.
Who knows?
Yeah.
They all came out of the banks. Young ordered them to saddle up. They grabbed, had other guys, as I didn't mention, rounding up horses. They went to the livery stable, two livery stables, got horses from there. One of them was from a livery stable who had rented a horse to Young so he could scout out Swanton and up through Sheldon and up that way. And he finally settled on the route to Sheldon and then into Felixburg, Quebec. So shooting started. I mean, people were starting to grab the guns. Somebody ran down toward the foundry and told them that their Confederates are raiding the town and they're shooting up the place and they're robbing the banks. So these guys grabbed whatever weapons they could find and they came running up. By that time, Young had all his men on horses and they galloped north on Main Street and they were being shot at. One of the Confederates named Higbee was shot twice in the shoulders, the left shoulder and the right shoulder, but the bullets went through.
Oh, come on.
And it didn't break his bones. Yeah, that actually happened.
Wow.
And so they were galloping north, and a Union captain named George Conger was home on leave. He'd been a veteran cavalryman himself. He rounded up a posse. They started chasing these guys out of town. And Young's group had a pretty good head start on them. So they galloped up. They turned right on what was now 105 towards Sheldon.
Mm-hmm.
Went up into Sheldon. They got to a covered bridge. There was a bank there that Young had spotted on one of his trips up that way that he thought they'd rob on the way. Of course, they didn't know at the time that they would be chased by a posse.
Right.
They decided not to rob that bank, but there was a farmer bringing a load of hay coming toward the bridge, so they stopped, they forced him off his horse, and they backed the hay into the bridge, set it on fire.
Oh, wow.
And of course, they were on the other side of the bridge, and galloped off, but the townspeople, luckily, were able to put the fire out. At that time, Sheldon was a bustling little community. It had seven or eight big hotels, because of the mineral springs there at Sheldon Springs. The townspeople put the fire out. Otherwise, it would have burned down the whole town.
Mm-hmm.
They kept galloping, and they made their way into Canada. But on the way, Young split off from his group, and he ordered them to keep going into Canada. And he took Higbee with him and helped him ride on his horse. And he took a circuitous route eastward and then northward and stopped at a farmhouse and asked the woman if she would take care of Higbee, if she would cleanse his wounds and take care of him. And she wondered what was going on, but he said, she said, how did this happen? He said, I'm sorry, I can't tell you, but here's some money. Will you take care of him? And she said, sure.
Fresh cash.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So she took care of him, and then Young took off and got captured. He went into Canada. And this is all at night now, because the raid was at 3:30. And, in October, it's getting dark by then. And by the time they reached Canada, it was dark. So he managed to sleep in a field overnight. And his other guys went into different little towns up there and got some place to sleep. And they all got arrested, except maybe about seven or eight who had managed to disappear. We don't know where they went.
Mm-hmm.
They did make it south eventually. But so Young slept in a field, and he stopped at a French house in Quebec and asked the woman there if he could have some breakfast because he was starving and freezing. It was cold. And he was in the house and they welcomed him. They didn't know who he was and welcomed. They spoke a little English. And
He got rid of the Confederate outfit and the cape at this point?
Yeah, well, no, he had it on. He still
had
it on.
And they did? Okay.
Yeah, because that's all he had, you know. And some of the members of the posse saw their horse. One of the guys that one of his horses, he realized, here's my horse. So they went into the house and grabbed Young, and we're bringing him out, and they're going to take him back to Vermont and hang him. Put him on trial first, and then hang him, of course, you know.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe not, yeah, but probably would. But he managed to escape from that. And as he pushed the man who was driving the wagon that he was on off and started to gallop away, but he got caught again. And the posse guys were going to take him back to Vermont. They ran into some British regular soldiers. Of course, Britain ruled Canada at that time.
Yeah.
And Young said, sir, these men have captured me. I'm a Southern Confederate soldier, and they're going to take me back to Vermont, and they're going to hang me. And so the officer said, no, wait a minute. No, you're not going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You have some of your other Confederates we've captured over in another town. And if you go into Felixburg, actually, if you take them there, you can have the other three and then take them home. But of course, he had no intention of releasing them. So Young joined his group there, and the Confederates held him, brought him to St. John, Sir Richelieu, right up on the Richelieu River, where they went through a trial. The United States wanted to extradite them back and hang them or try them. They managed to get through that trial, all right. The Canadian judge said that he had no jurisdiction, so he let them go. But they were, so most of them went, Young and three others were held, and they were held for another trial. The United States was very determined to get these guys back. They went through another trial, which lasted 2 or 3 months, one of the longest trials in Canadian history at that time, and they were released again. The others, the three others left, but Young was rearrested and ordered to go to Toronto, where they wanted to try him for planning the raid in Canada, which he did, but he never told anybody that he did.
Mm-hmm.
That was in St. John when, before they came into Underhill, into St. Albans. So they were released then, and so he was kept, and he remained in Toronto for 3 or 4 months, and finally the judges said, okay, this is enough, you can go home. The Canadian government has no more jurisdiction. But he couldn't go home. Young and several thousand other Southerners who had were charged with committing crimes against the United States were not allowed amnesty by President Johnson, who succeeded President Lincoln.
Right.
So Young stayed in Montreal for a while. He married the daughter of a minister, Presbyterian minister, who had been sent up to Canada to to take care of the folks up there. And then he went to Edinburgh, Scotland, where he studied law. He was a divinity student originally, but he through these trials he realized this is where I should be and what I should do. So he studied law there in Edinburgh, and then he studied law in Ireland, and he came back and studied some more in Louisville. He set up a very successful criminal law practice.
So he actually finally did come back.
He finally did in 1868, wow. 3 years after the war.
And talk about the money. The money, some of the money at least, got back into the banks in St. Albans.
Yes. No one knows really where all the money went. Some of it got south. Some of it may have been stolen. Who knows, you know. But the Canadian government decided that they would send $88,000 back to the three banks, and they split that up, and that was the end of that. But they never really recovered a lot of that money.
Mm-hmm.
No one really knows what happened to it. It's just an incredible feat, and an incredible young man.
Yeah, what a story, Ted.
Yeah, it is.
So I got to let you run here, but my other question for you, so why did you make this fiction? It sounds like you had a great, you got the history nailed.
Well, the history nailed, but there was very little written about Young himself. And he didn't write any. He wrote several books after. But he never wrote about himself. And so I decided, even all the research I did in Kentucky and here and in Canada, I started writing this as a young adult nonfiction book. But it just didn't work. It did not work. So I just tossed it all away and decided I'm going to write a book for all ages. And I think I'll make a novel out of it so that I can use dialogue that probably never was said,
right,
that sort of thing.
Right. Are you going to be talking about this anywhere? Do you have any talks coming up, any bookstores you're going to be at or anything?
I'm just going to be I'm looking into several bookstores right now. I haven't had a chance because I just got... I was up in Sheldon where they had a big celebration yesterday where the Raiders went through and tried to burn that covered bridge. And I was in St. Albans during the commemoration, and I've been a couple other places. So I'm trying to keep
busy. I noticed you had a bullet wound in one of your shoulders there. It went right through. It's amazing how clean that was.
Right there.
Wow. Hey, thanks for coming in. So where can people get your book?
Well, they can order it at bookstores and other places that sell books. And bookstores and libraries can order it on Ingram. That's the national distributor. Or they can buy a copy from Tamarack Press, my publisher in Warren, Vermont.
Okay.
And that site is pgo@thetamarackpress.com. That's pgo@thetamarackpress.com. Tamarack is T-A-M-A-R-A-C. And that's it.
Beautiful. Great to see you.
Good, Ted Tedford. Thanks so much for inviting me.
The author of Incident at St. Albans. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. We'll be back with our White House report. We're also going to be joined by Governor Shumlin later this hour. We'll be back after this.
Get a set of winter tires for just $1 during the Roll Into Savings event at the new McMahon Chevy.